You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Adonna Wolf. Our host, Ebony Johnson and Barry Jackson, are at the table, along with our guest in studio today, Kat Mahari. Welcome to Urban Connections, Kat.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful to have you. And gotta have give Ebony some big thanks for facilitating our conversation today with Kat Mahari. So I'll let you finish the introductions.
I will. Again, thanks so much, Kat, for being here. And just a bit of what I've gathered about your background as a performance artist, a street dancer, a director, a designer, even a singer, releasing a couple of EPs in Europe. And you are also the founder and director of 31st in Brooklyn, a platform for performance art and community engagement. And I've read about a bit about your story and saw some of your work online and was just fascinating in having a conversation with you about the woman behind this work and this kind of thought and feeling process. And so I appreciate you for taking the time for being here today.
No problem.
Yeah. So I want to start, would like to start out by, if you, especially in conjunction with this being International Women's Month and what we do here on Urban Connections from a Black perspective, can you share a bit of your personal journey and how you got here? How could you be a dancer, director, designer, you know, a part of owning 31st in Brooklyn and singing in Europe? And how did you get here?
That's a really lovely question. And I do thank you for asking it. I started off my foundation in the arts is within street dance, as well as I used to be part of a group called the West African Heritage Youth Organization, and I'm from the block. So a lot of the radical arts engagement, radical arts innovation that has come to be a mainstay of what we consider stateside culture, whether it's hip-hop, jazz, R&B, rock and roll, all of those different lineages, ragtime, blues, were things that came from the marginalized community and places that I was a generative member of. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how it came about. I wouldn't say, you know, I didn't come down to the earth and it's like, I'm going to do this like this. You know, I am a African descendant woman. I am a black woman from the States. And I am just part of this ongoing lineage and genealogy of creating innovative arts and community.
Mm-hmm. And you're not, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a couple of places, mm-hmm. but I mainly had some of my formative years in arts happened in St. Louis, Missouri.
In St. Louis, okay. So you have a quote on your website that by John Coltrane.
Yeah.
That where he says, if you play and make a statement and it's a valid statement, that's a truth right there in itself.
Yes.
Can you speak to that a little bit more in the work that you do and just your process and how that
Absolutely.
Inspires you?
I believe that play, particularly the intelligent, intuitive, wisdom-filled play that humans do, are necessary embodied expressions of who they are right then and there. And that's an honest thing. Mm-hmm. It's an honest way of being, and from having an honest way of being, you can come to a truth about yourself and a truth about the world as you see it, as you experience it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think via play, as you see in hip hop, from Double Dutch, from the rhythms on the block, how that then gave way to a huge interconnected community full of diversity of blackness, of sexual, gender, religious blackness. So I do believe that play is one of the central ways that we can come to understand the goodness in our heart and the beauty that we express mm-hmm. even from our horrors of being. So I think play mm-hmm. is a very pivotal part of what it means to be human
You go ahead. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna ask Kat. So first, my first question was, you know, can you describe more what street dance is?
Yeah.
And now there seems to be this evolution, like in dance culture and all of the arts, where you see this sort of hip hop, you know, dance expression, but it seems to be getting kind of corrupt and kind of corroded. Can you talk about what street dance is and sort of the evolution of it to where we are now?
Well, I will speak on my experiences, and I will speak from my current understanding, and that understanding may become elevated tonight at March Buck Madness, but I'm going to speak on what I know right now.
Okay.
And so when we say street dance, we're really speaking a word, it's really a phrase that actually is implicit in its connotation of dance happening primarily by African descendant bodies outside of mainstream Eurocentric studios. So that's when we're speaking of street dance. We're literally speaking on things that do occasionally and often happen in urban areas. But as we know, we don't all come from urban areas, and still the majority of African descendants of chattel slavery within the U.S., still the majority of our bodies are living in the South in rural environments. Not all of us, of course, not even in the South. So, but we are speaking of dances that are occurring outside of mainstream Eurocentric paradigms of what it means to have artistic expression, which is why two-step, which has seven cities with their own unique expression that came from the South, right on the heels or right as part of the journey of the Great Black Migration, is considered a street dance, even though it primarily happens in lounges and juke joints, and it came from rural environments. But we're definitely hinting, at least implicitly, at the fact that these are dances and cultures and ways of being and ways of playing to get to an honest expression that come from Black bodies.
You're a part of, and you know, correct me wherever, because this is information I've gathered, but a part of what I've read about your work, it's centered on Blackness, and you're a part of that, and in just your experience of that. What is that term Blackness to you? I've heard you just speak about us having an authentic way of expressing ourselves.
Yeah, I play with even the term Blackness, because I used to actually, with another loose collective of people here in Kansas City, I used to put on these parties, basically fundraising parties for the Quilombo Cultural Center right here in Kansas City, Missouri at 35th and Woodland. And we would call our parties the Black Fist Party. And one of the interesting things was, who was going to show up to a party that had the word black in it? You know, just, you know, obviously I'm a human being, and obviously race, like sex, like gender, like the fact that this is a table, these are all social constructs. These are all determined via the relational language of human beings, right? But at the same time, the fact that it was amazing to me, we would have an amazing leading group like Heartfelt Anarchy hosting. We would have free food, you know, that we would literally get catered from Luffy's or from like JJ's. We're talking about like either Caribbean or soul food, or we'd be in the kitchen cooking up greens for days, you know? And we would have DJs like DJ Boomer Naughty coming through. We would have video projections. We would have live musicians. A complete experience of just utter fun. But who's going to come if it's called the Black Fist? You know, when so many people would come if it was, you know, they'd like to go to the white party, right? They were like, oh, it's the white party. We're going to go down and everybody go. I'm not knocking the white party, because I've seen people look good in white. You know what I mean? Particularly heavily melanated people look really good in white. You know, so there's no denying that. But even when I'm speaking of Blackness, I am speaking on the social construct and its metamorphosized and modular iterations globally, as well as specifically within the U.S. And I am just sort of funneling as many of my human experiences as possible through this lens of blackness, you know, mm-hmm. because I am a human being, you mm-hmm. know. I am a human being.
That's at first, yeah.
Yeah.
And is that what you're trying to, not trying to, but is that what you most want to come out, like beyond this term blackness, this is who, this is me as a human as well?
I, you know, my birthday is April 1st.
Oh.
And that's April Fool's Day. And since I was 14, I have been called Ilegwa's, or Papa, as a lot of black people from the States know them, Papa Ilegwa, the man at the crossroads, little mm-hmm. daughter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm playing around heavily. I'm walking through all the crossroads, all the doors. And yes, to a very real extent, I do want people to connect with me as a human being, as a sentient creature existing and expressing. And at the same time, I think if you seeing people have to reconcile themselves to blackness is also part of my joy and tricks and doorways into what it means to be human. So it is definitely centralizing blackness as well. Mm-hmm. I do want people, me, if you don't see me as a human being, I don't know, what do you see me as? Plutonian? Yeah. You know?
Kryptonite, maybe?
Kryptonite, you know? So I think that's part of it. Yes, you're going to get to the human being because I'm a human being. Mm-hmm. And as I deal with being a human being, being happy, sad, being raised and socialized as black, you need to deal with that. You absolutely need to deal with that. You wouldn't tell, I would hope one would not speak to any segment of any group of people living within blackness and decide that them living within blackness is a subsidiary of them being human being. I would hope that they would be able to gain the wisdom and the humor of what it means to be a human being with all the other corollaries. You know, you wouldn't tell an ancient person from Kemet that they're not a human being because they're from Kemet or they're from Nubia. You know what I mean? Like, so
that happens a lot, though.
Yes, absolutely happens, you know, which is why I tell them, meet me at the crossroads and bring some whiskey.
We're going to take a break, yeah. Donna, now?
Yes, we're going to take a break, and we come back. We will continue our conversation with artist Kat Mahari, who is the founding member of the 31st.
I am the founder and director.
Founder and director of 31st and Brooklyn. I'm going to call it an artist collective. I've seen a little bit about it on the website, and we want to talk to you about mm-hmm. the programs and things that you have going on there. Absolutely. So, we'll be back. Stay with us here at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. We'll be back after these messages.
What happens to our bodies when we fast from food? A registered dietitian says it looks for energy from other sources.
The main operating system the body uses is glucose. It's like gasoline in your car. Your body is going to convert whatever it can to glucose to keep functioning.
We get some tips on how to maintain energy during religious and spiritual fasts on the next Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right after Links Mix.
Is it possible to build a positive future amid the degradations and violence in prison? Jaws of Justice Radio talks with Ricky Kidd and Frank Polina about how they are charting a path to a good life while in Jackson County Jail. Jaws of Justice Radio, 9 a.m. Monday, right after Democracy Now!
We'll be right back.
FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. That was John Coltrane, Interplay. Mm-hmm. Our guest in studio today is Kat Mahari, local artist on many levels. Mm-hmm. And so we want to continue our conversation with her. Ebony?
Yeah, when we left off, we talked about me being the founder and director of 31st in Brooklyn, a platform for mm-hmm. artists to play in various genres. And I'd like for you to speak to that and how that came about, why it exists, and then also help me with the quilombo.
Quilombo.
The quilombo, what that means and how that drives what you do with 31st in Brooklyn.
All right. Well, 31st in Brooklyn was founded, we're just now in our second year, but it's founded about 2 years ago, and it was mainly just founded on the strength that I saw that there was a need for more opportunities. You know, I have a saying that the sun is big enough to shine on everyone, so it's never as if there can never be too much. You know, if you look mm-hmm. at it in that way. So giving more opportunities to artists, primarily artists of color, primarily black recognize mm-hmm. artists or artists working within fields of blackness mm-hmm. To create and to explore. So it really came about out of that and out of the need to, or out of the joy. I wanted to just see more. I wanted mm-hmm. to see more of that. There are a couple of arts organizations, of course, like the Alvin Ailey Organization, mm-hmm. Charlotte Street Foundation, that do as much as they can to support arts. But of course, it's never enough. And if the sun has to shine everywhere, then you have to create as many massive support mm-hmm. as the sun. Mm-hmm. So it came out of that.
Well, you say, Donna, you always like to say, God bless the child that's got its own. That's called right. that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. 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 So absolutely. It came out of that. I wanted to just see more people that I knew and that I did not know have as many opportunities as possible to grow their work and to gain an understanding of what it means to be about your work in a professional capacity and to explore the different ways that they might look, because we don't have too many paradigms of what that means to have a professional capacity. We only have a couple that are really promoted within the arts community. Mm. And it's not enough, because there's billions of people and there's millions of us just here in this country, you know? So we need to have more examples of creative pathways of what it means mm. to be a professional artist, to be a recognized and acknowledged, valuable, salient member of a community.
Mm-hmm. Which, to your point of there's Arts KC, there's Charlotte Street Foundation, mm-hmm. but as far as here in Kansas City, but there's a difference when we tell our story from our perspective.
Absolutely.
And we're the authors.
Absolutely. There's a difference mm-hmm. when you go into a room and you're mm-hmm. the only one that looks like you, mm-hmm. particularly. And if you're the only one that thinks like you too, yeah. oh no. Yeah. You know, that's just even more stress, mm-hmm. you know, and you don't necessarily always need to have that stress and to be able to be. I don't think, I know there's a thing that our arts and our community engagement comes out of, you know, the stress of being black. And that's true, because we black, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And it's quite stressful. We're human beings living within blackness in this country, and that is quite stressful. But our arts and our community, that came out of our humanity. Mm-hmm. And that's a very beautiful, powerful place to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think it's important to emphasize the fact that being black is not stressful. Being black is a wonderful, rich human experience.
Yeah.
It's other people's mm-hmm. issues with yes. blackness which mm-hmm. which puts the stress on us, mm-hmm. but not us ourselves and in our blackness. And I think that mm-hmm. you know, that gets twisted out mm-hmm. there, like there's something wrong with you. Yeah. You're all stressed mm-hmm. out. Well, any reasonable human being under these circumstances mm-hmm. would be yeah. stressed out.
Yeah. Absolutely. You can call me a daffodil. If you treat me the same, I'm going to be stressed.
Right. Doesn't matter.
Will you go ahead and speak
to the quilombo? The quilombo is a Brazilian Portuguese word, and it is a word that comes from a movement of escaped enslaved Africans and indigenous people within Brazil, escaping plantations, escaping the systems of domination in which they were under, and actually going and creating semi-autonomous and or autonomous communities on land that they stewarded. And so similar to the Moors, similar to other groups of African descended people, even within this country, as we know, the story of Nat Turner is not necessarily that he was just rising up for a rebellion on that plantation. He was rising up in rebellion to escape to a land in which his foremothers were actual a semi-autonomous group of African people. So that's what a quilombo is, and that's basically the liberation phrase that the Quilombo Cultural Center right here in Kansas City, Missouri at 35th and Woodland, 3504 Woodland, operates under a gentleman by the name of Sean Malone, where you can go there and you can help him plant his peaches and the fruit, and you can be part of community. And there's a wonderful space in which many other people, not just myself, many other people, including Danny Diallo-Hines, who's now located at 55th and Troost, but at one point was hosting his Afro-Caribbean West African dance classes out of that space as well. So it's a wonderful opportunity. In fact, there was a crump battle there, if I'm not mistaken, just last September. So it's a wonderful opportunity to be in the community and to be on the block and to have many intersecting ways of being in humanity and generational, intergenerational contact.
Yeah, when we were in the break, we got to talking, and the subject of comedic yoga came up. So first you got to say what Kemet is, and then talk about comedic yoga.
Well, I am not an expert, so I'm going to preface
that. Tell us what you know.
I am not an expert at anything. Don't ask me.
Okay. tell us what you think.
Kemetic yoga, well, Kemet is the name for that idea and that land and the culture we recognize as being ancient Egyptian. So it's our understanding, it's my understanding of what the people themselves called themselves. And so that's what Kemet is. And that we would pronounce it, and we would put two E's in there, two vowels in there. But they may not have used vowels in the same way in which we use vowels, because of course language is completely fluid and people do all kinds of amazing things. If you know anything about like the Xhosa language, you know, with all the clicks, and so humans are brilliant in that regard. So that's what Kemet is. And Kemetic yoga was created by a gentleman whose name I cannot recall, but I do believe he created it in Chicago, Illinois. And has now grown to have teachers all over the country, Florida, Atlanta, and currently definitely in Kansas City, there is a Kemetic yoga teacher who offers classes in conjunction with a partnership with Nella Yoga, right at 54th or 55th and Troost. And Nella Yoga is owned by Chanel Peterson. I would just call her Chanel, and you know when you get to a point where you call somebody their first name, you almost forget their last name.
Yeah.
Like what?
Like their phone number. Yeah,
I'm like, that either. What you say?
Name out there.
Yeah.
I'd like to throw a name out there. As far as the Egyptian yoga, the fellow originally out of Florida is housed in Atlanta.
That's what it is.
Sabaima. That's what he has evolved to as the teacher.
Okay.
I can't think of his given name.
Yeah.
You know. Don't ask me.
Okay.
All right.
So the Kemetic yoga, does that have any connection to the ancient Kemet way of thinking of Ma'at or philosophy of Ma'at?
Well, first of all, I am not a practitioner of Kemetic yoga. Second of all, it should.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. All right. We're going to have to find us an expert in Kinetic Yoga and we'll do that. We'll do that.
Contact
Thank
Nella.
You so much
You're
for
welcome.
Bringing that up.
I want to clarify, too, because some people may be listening and say, 31st in Brooklyn, because you're not actually located at 31st in Brooklyn.
No,
but on 35th in Woodland, rather,
in
the space that
we're
you just shared.
We're currently in residence at 35th in Woodland at the Quilombo Cultural Center. This year, we're doing a big push to actually get our own building, actually, at 27th and Van Brunt over there in that neighborhood. We're looking to buy a property from the Kansas City Land Bank, and there's a multi-use property currently that is in our sites, mixed use, and we're going to convert one of the, it's basically four apartments upstairs, we're going to convert them into two. One of them will be for a guest artist coming into town, whether it be Herman Mehari when he comes back into town and he needs a spot in which to do his work in, or Tony Tissier, or any of the amazing Angel McNeil, any of the amazing people creating work nowadays, as well as then the second apartment will be affordable. We'll make it an affordable income apartment. And on the very first floor, the entry floor, that's where we'll have our main event space.
Nice. So can you tell us how you came up with the name 31st in Brooklyn?
I was standing at 31st in Brooklyn.
That's that easy.
God is good. Follow the way.
So, Kat, you've been on the receiving end of lots of awards and recognitions and fellowships and all of that. I was wondering about your experience in the Eurocentric arena. Of dance and performance arts, and I'm sure that was your, I'm sure that was part of your inspiration for creating what you are creating now because of that paradigm that you were in the middle of. What was your experience like there? Classical ballet and all that stuff.
All that. Well, you know, particularly in the years when I was just a beginning student of ballet. I mean, I'm very good at being a blindest kind of person. You know, I'm very good at being like, I hear everything you're saying, but I'm only going to take the stuff that I can actually use. You know, all that great. You know, because I'm not going to stop you from expressing yourself.
Right.
But that don't mean I'm going to take all that stuff in. That's not for me.
Right.
What was it like to be at the intersection?
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's very interesting. It can be whatever you can handle. I am not a person to be tokenized. I am not a person to talk to out the side of your mouth. And if we're looking at like Western astrology, my sun sign is Aries, so please don't come for me. You know, I just don't have any. I've always looked at the things that I've done as, particularly as an adult, when it came to studying at the Conservatory of Music and Dance, and then studying at Royal Central. What the hell is the school?
Oops, sorry. No, hell is okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Royal Opera House?
No, Royal Central School of Speech and Drama, as well as working. When I was at the Royal Opera House, I was fortunate because I was in Ballet Black's trainee program. So that's a dance company that specifically looks at having more black and brown bodies in ballet. So I was not having to mess with such a heavily Eurocentric company as like the Royal Ballet or anything like that. But I'm always just been about what I've been about. When I was at a student at the conservatory, I was also out here doing hip hop and hot wings on Sunday nights. And then I was in the summers, you know, scholarship at Merce Cunningham Dance Company. And some days I would come in the studio early in the morning because I would have to like open the studio sometimes. And I would fall asleep. We had a church pew in the hallway and I would fall asleep right there because they were like, what are you doing all night? I was like, I was out dancing. I was learning from Khalif Sellers and being fortunate to dance at a club with Shannon Witchway Mabra, who these are all pivotal figures in house dance and hip hop dance. So, I mean, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to play. And if you try to stop me from playing, I'm pretty much going to ignore you. There's no way. You know, there's no way. And when I came to Kansas City and I saw the beautiful, radical, groundbreaking work that people such as Manuel Lucky Harvey has been doing in this city. And if you don't know Emmanuel Lucky Harvey, he is the founder and key critical participant in creation of March Buck Madness, which is an annual Crump event. He also has the organization that sponsored it called I Push. He is amazing, awesome, generous artist and beautiful black man. Mm-hmm. So when you see somebody like Lucky Harvey pushing so hard and having to intersect, you're talking about me having to intersect with different kinds of whiteness. I don't have it nowhere near like Lucky. I mean, Lucky is like intersecting with multiple kinds of communities and all within a varying paradigm of whiteness or anti-blackness, and still pushing the culture, still pushing community, still pushing radical arts, innovation, creativity, individuality, as well as community responsibility. So I'm actually quite fortunate. And if anybody has ever seen me move in KC, they wouldn't understand how stubborn I am to maintain my blessed space.
You have to be that way in order to maintain it. Yeah.
I want your clarification real quick. You know, when you were talking about comedic yoga earlier, and I asked you about the name of the people who developed it, I finally found it. Dr. Asar Hapi. Yeah. And Yasir Rahotep, I guess given name Elvred Lawrence of Chicago.
That's how I saw. I thought it was.
I'm like,
what the
fuck? Yeah, yeah. You know, but I thought it was only. I thought it would only be right to,
mm-hmm. Now y'all got the information.
Now we know. Now we can use it.
Try to use that mic anyway, Barry. Hmm? Try to use. Yeah. Try.
Yeah.
To
so.
Oh, I probably won't be saying too much more anyway. Okay. I'm listening.
All right.
I'm learning.
So, as I was working within this intersections. Primarily of like Arts KC, Charlotte Street Foundation, the conservatory, and at the same time rolling with the crew. Like if anybody else knows me, they know some of my closest homies here in Kansas City. For years, for the first decade I came in, and I only actually predominantly hung out with musicians because we came from the same kind of street mentality of get it in. What are you doing? We're going to session. And I'm not, if somebody says, hey, you can come through in session, we got a speaker, or somebody says, hey, we can come through in session, we got a bass player, I'm gonna go with a bass player, you know what I mean? as well as having a background and experience playing music as a child growing up. I played trumpet and I self-taught myself on the keyboards as well, so being in a jazz band, a concert band, as well as a symphony. So it's like I just lived in this intersection, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't have this idea that I'm not supposed to be doing. I look at Robert Johnson from Mississippi. My granny's from Mississippi. You know what I mean? I remember Chuck Berry from St. Louis, but we also have to remember Ike Turner from East St. Louis. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? James Brown from Atlanta. Like I'm. This is just part of my lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot tell James Brown that he can only work with this particular kind of musician. True. You can't tell people down in New Orleans that they didn't have jazz dance because we think of jazz dance as only coming from New York City. Mm-hmm. When jazz was in New Orleans in the 1800s, almost 30 years, you know. Yeah. So I'm just living in this lineage. I'm living in this intersection of lineage and genealogy of creative expression. Even the dance I'm currently studying within street dance, though my foundation is and my mainstay is still hip-hop and house, Crump, you know, the co-creator of Crump, Tie-Dyes, he's in town right now. This is the co-creator of a massive global movement philosophy of radical emotional expression and spiritual transcendence. And he's here right now. So I don't even create the lanes in which I'm moving in. I always stay happy. I always stay at play because it's obviously not my call to be that person who actually has to take the responsibility to innovate something. I'm just the person that gets to come and play in the sandbox.
Mm. You have there's a part of this play, your investigation of movement and language, and you kind of speak to the different types of dance that you've been a part of, and then even in our conversation, our use of language. But in that, in your creative process of attempting to express yourself, and you know, and then doing so and allowing other people to do the same, What has the, how and where has that investigation led you of language and movement and at this point in time?
That's a very good question, and I cannot, I cannot say this is exactly where it's going to lead me. This is the end of the sentence. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you currently I am an artist in residence at High Concept Labs, which is a space in Chicago, Illinois. And there I work with the Shy Buck Collective, which is a crump collective in there. And we're looking, and my particular project looks at looks at violence as a construct of relational language, but it also goes into this very long remix of The Monkey King and Journey to the West. And it's a very strong story that also, for me, connects with my own appreciation of Papa Legba and the person that opens up all crossroads and all doors to play in all cultures. And also, it looks at transcendence and what are the different ties as we move through the world that allow us to deal with violence. If you look at crump, I keep going back to crump. Obviously, crump is like currently something I'm very passionate about. I do speak about it often. I try to give respect to the creators as well as my own teacher, who comes from Kansas City, a beautiful multidisciplinary artist named Quentin Hammonds. He plays drums, he sings, he's a preacher, and he's the leader of a crump family. Mm-hmm. So this, I like I said, once again, I didn't come out of nothing. Mm-hmm. So when I look at crump, and crump also has an acronym that stands for Kingdom Radically Uplifted Mighty Praise, a lot of times when people see this beautiful movement and this beautiful philosophy in action, they are attuned to its assertiveness, they're attuned to the energy of it and its seeming aggression. But this is a movement philosophy, what I consider the most innovative form of street dance physical theater currently in production coming out of the U.S.
So is there a crump dance language?
Absolutely. There is a vocabulary. Mm-hmm. It is a technique. You are not... Yes,
can
yes.
you describe it now? I wish we had video, but can you describe some of the elements of...
I am not really good at describing the language, but I can tell you, how would I describe this movement? But there's a definite vocabulary. There's things such as power, talking, getting loud. There's various stomps. There's a specific kind of groove within crump. And it's, of course, this is one of the difficulties in describing a movement language, you know, because I'm using words, and unless I can, I just don't have that kind of capacity currently to draw for you a visual of what it would look like if you've never seen it.
I've seen it.
Or even if you've seen it, I can be like, oh, that's talking. But okay. There's no picture. So you're like, okay, that's. Somebody listening on air is going to be like, that's talking? What is talking? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, it's when you have your hand in a certain position, and this is a jab. Mm-hmm. And from these fundamental vocabulary, you create a sentence structure, because crump is narrative based. It is storytelling. That's why I consider it the most radical form of street dance physical theater, if not the most radical form of physical theater out here, period. Okay. It is because it is based in embodied experience and the ability to communicate the full emotional as well as physical spectrum of what your life and your day has been like. Mm-hmm. So we also have character development, because we're talking about narrative, we're talking about storytelling. Mm-hmm. We have character development. You have setting. You have to be able to create a set, a scene also within crump. You also have to be able to express your character. You have to be able to tell that story. And you have to be able to then let it go, and so that it can go to that higher place, so that it can be released from you. Very much like what they demand of actors and actresses within theater in film. Mm-hmm. This is Crump. Mm-hmm. Only there is no lighting designer. There is no set. You just have to illustrate it all with your body. And it has to be something that comes from your honest expression to give it a truth.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it won't resonate.
It will not resonate. Mm-hmm. So that. Okay. Hopefully that at least explained aspects.
No, I think that says a lot. For me anyway, in understanding that Crump as a dance expression mm-hmm. has evolved. It's not a one-off thing. It has evolved mm-hmm. just like, you know, classical ballet and all that kind of stuff, which has its own language and movements.
And the beautiful thing about Crump is that the majority of this language was created by its co-creators in the kitchen. So mm-hmm. we're not talking like ballet that has so much like the pas de châle, which comes from Northern Africa, mm-hmm. and then 200-300 years later, then maybe 100-200 years later, the Italians really mm-hmm. get a hold of it, and then they begin to codify it, and mm-hmm. the captain. De Medici moves to France, marries mm-hmm. the Sun King, and then he further codifies mm-hmm. it within a Eurocentric framework. Mm-hmm, we're mm-hmm. talking about a very mature mm-hmm. form of movement with a very transcendental mission mm-hmm. from the gate. And we're talking about people who took the time out of their lives to make sure that they could create a vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So they didn't just take from everywhere. Mm-hmm. They took the time out of their lives to create a vocabulary by which people could then really begin to investigate in a sophisticated manner, embodied experience.
And have you been writing about all of this?
I don't write. No. Mm-hmm. I write grants and I'm done. No, I'm joking. I might one day will write something, yeah. But you know, words for me are beautiful, yeah. but they are another source of creative expression. So mm-hmm. I have to take my time with it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the ideas flow so much more smoother when I'm able to physically express it, mm-hmm. as well as I think writing is a form of physical expression. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But currently, I am not at that level. If you want somebody to write about it, then you should probably ask. If you're going to ask somebody locally, then ask Manuel Lucky Harvey. Mm-hmm. And if you're not going to ask somebody locally, then ask Tight Eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. get at the publishing company so that Tight Eyes gets a book deal. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm. Well, that's part of the thing that you mentioned earlier. If we don't tell our own stories, mm-hmm. then they get distorted and they get mm-hmm. told by somebody else and appropriated by other people. Is generally what happens.
Right. Yeah. And then even the way, because I feel you. Don on asking has Kat written about some of this, because the way that you describe it, I think sometimes sometimes there's a tendency between what is even willing to be labeled as, oh well, that's a black thing, has some sort of a diminishment, like a certain type of dance, you know. Even you say, even though for yourself you're fluid and you've done that from street to ballet dance, but it can be looked upon as, oh well, ballet is more of a professional, more whatever sort of expression of our physical mm-hmm. bodies. But I don't know as many people would speak about Crump the way you had, you just have expressed mm-hmm. it, but that's because of your investigation of it.
That's my passion of it mm-hmm. coming through. That's my, when you decide to become intelligent about a thing, then you decide to become intelligent about a thing. So the way I'm speaking of it is different, yet no different than the way, a Quentin Hammonds would speak on it, mm-hmm. or a Lucky Harvey would speak on it, or a Mike Anthony Smith, also aka Phenom, would speak on it, or any of the massive movers of Crump, Vendetta, any of the massive movers of Crump here in Kansas City. I am just currently being interviewed, and I don't want to do the people that have influenced me wrong. Mm-hmm. And I'm only going to speak on what they have actually in turn imparted to me. Mm-hmm. So that's just sort of how it is. I don't speak on I speak on the crossroads because that was imparted to me.
Kat, you've been termed another one of your labels that I've read about you is as a choreo political performance artist. had you read that?
I don't think so.
Did that come from that KC Studio magazine?
Yeah.
Man, don't even get me started on that article because they sent me a draft and I was literally about to go and get all the blackness organize and protest that space.
Wow.
I was not. They sent me a draft and I was like, if you put this in here, you know, I'm going to burn you down. Like, I don't care. It's just a building, you know? but what is true is that I am a dancer and I mean, who is not? Let's see, choreo. So it's dance writing, movement writing. So when I see you walk down the street, I'm going to read your moves and I'm going to read your moves in such a way to where I'm going to have an understanding of your story. Political, you're a being living within socio, political, economic times, contextualized times. Activists, if you care about your life and care about your own humanity and anybody else's humanity in any way, you're going to do what you can to set as many boundaries as possible for yourself and others to be able to express themselves in the way that you consider a more productive expression of what it means to be human, right? So I don't care.
Okay, can you tell us I so feel that because that's a very healthy attitude. Can you tell us about some program, the programming that goes on 31st?
Yes.
At 31st and Brooklyn.
I do. And I also want to, I know I keep referring this, but tonight is a very, very special night in Kansas City. It is the 5th annual March Buck Madness, which is an event put on by Emmanuel Lucky Harvey this year, also supported by Michael Anthony Smith, a.k.a. Phenom, Featuretron, a.k.a. Feature, and I believe Chris Davies, a.k.a. Chris Artist, all amazing crumpers within the Kansas City regional scene. And they did bring the co-creator, Tight Eyes, into town. He is here tonight going to do a guest battle with Angel McNeil. If anyone has an appreciation for street dance, culture, street dance movement, for what it means to be an artist, it is definitely within the embodied practice of Angel McNeil. She is one of the top humans doing her thing internationally. She has won international battles, competed and participated in community engagement internationally, and she is actually from Kansas City, Missouri, a graduate of Paseo Academy of Paseo Academy of Fine Arts. Paseo Fine Arts Academy. Yeah, of the arts, with the arts, for the arts. And so that is a massive thing that's happening tonight down in KCK. Doors open at 5 o'clock. Battles start at 6 p.m. If you're under the age 7, it's free entry. It's
We can't give out.
Okay.
But where can they get in more information?
They can get more information if they go to the Facebook page of March Buck Madness 5.
Okay.
And that's going to be in KCK. Can I say that?
Yeah. It's just the price.
Oh, just not? Okay. Yeah. Outside of the price, please come down. And tomorrow, Tight Eyes is giving a workshop as well in the same location. A two-hour workshop.
What is the location?
You can get the location is Praise Chapel, KC, 3650 North 67th Street, Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay.
And as I said, Crump is a street dance that has a transcendental aspect. Even though I am not necessarily a Christian, you know, coming through as I do from more of a hoodoo practitioner, which, you know, a lot of people's granny, they, I don't know what you think your granny doing, but she's doing that hoodoo when she gets those psalms together and she makes that vision board and then she goes and lights that one candle with that four corners. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
But to Donna's, if you could share, we have a few minutes left here. The programs that you have going on at 31st.
Okay, so last year I was really fortunate to be able to support a couple of projects. Agro Art, which is an arts residency program for artists that includes a stipend and a live-work residency on a black-owned organic farm. There's also Leo Gaydon and his work, which is a 7-part series that looks at street dancers living in their community and how they intersect with the different changes that happen in their community, as well as their relationship to their field, as well as what it means to be an aging dancer within street dance, because as we all know, street dance can seem to get more and more physical. But I just tell people, just go to the two-step. You'll be all right. You'll have something to do.
I wanted to talk about two-step, but tell us more about the programs that go on there.
So that, and that's called Our Streets, I believe. This year coming up, we're having this big push for fundraising for the redevelopment of the building we're attempting to acquire through the land bank, so that we can actually start having more events. We also have like an open session on Wednesdays, and that's like sort of like one Wednesday out of a month, and we have musicians come through and jam. Of course, I'm going to have musicians come through and jam. I've realized that there are things I took for granted, like having musicians around me. People are like, oh, you really need to make, do something with this. I'm like, yeah, I'm about to do something. I'm about to go to their house, you know, and jam, you know. So we're trying to make that more of an instituted aspect of Kansas City, because that's one of the ways in which joy has been divested from bodies inhabiting blackness within Kansas City. You can go and get a lot of live music, but you can't dance to it anymore. You know, and that's like, which is why I love the foundation, but you will hardly ever catch me there, because that's torture.
Yeah, I mean, to have music and not be able to dance kind of sort of doesn't even make sense. Talk about the two-step.
I love the two-step.
Me too.
Yeah, there are, so far to my knowledge, and I've been very fortunate, because my main teachers of the two-step, when it comes to the lineage and the genealogy of the stories, are actually from the St. Louis Bop Society. Okay. And if you know the St. Louis Bop, it's its own particular kind of bop.
Yeah.
And so my first teacher of the two-step actually is Mike White, from Chicago, and okay. I was learning Chicago style stepping. But when it comes to actually getting into the genealogy and the mapping of the different histories, that would have to start with like Deborah Phelps and St. Louis, Emma. Oh my God, I forgot her name. Okay. Oh well. But the two-step is amazing. There are 7 distinct cities currently that I know that have their own explicit form of the two-step, and that would be St. Louis, Kansas City, Chicago, Detroit, Philly, and Houston. Sorry, there's 6 cities. Those are the 6 cities that have their own distinct style of the two-step. Now, there's courses of city, like in D.C., where they have their own kind of partnering, but it's not really based on the two-step, uh-huh. so far to my knowledge. And these are forms of movement that came out of the push of black bodies from the South going to the North during the Great Black Migrations. So that's why we have these distinct style of two-steps. And if you notice, in every city, they also have their own particular understanding of sexual and race and gender-based constructions. Because if you go to Chicago, you can go to a two-step, you can go to a Steppers Night in Chicago, as they're typically called, and you'll see a group of men, like 2 or 3 or 4, even partnering each other. In certain cities like KC, that becomes a little bit more problematic. And it's, you know, so every city actually has then developed its own understanding of how to then deal with intimacy as well as sexual and gendered diversity.
Who is prominent here in Kansas City as far as the two-step?
There are a number of people, and you put me on the spot, so as soon as you say that, I'm like, oh, and then her name just goes out my head. But there are a number of people prominent in the two-step. I am still currently working on the website of 31st in Brooklyn, but eventually there will be connections and links put up there so that people can get more involved. Because, of course, I mean, two-step is an amazing partnering dance form. And what, could you imagine what people playing with that, what they've already done, as well as what they could do if they're able to play with it more and express it more and just do all kinds of things more and more with it? I think the two-step is one of the most beautiful forms of partnered movement out there. And particularly when it comes to the bop, which is, we know, a two-step is type of dance done in the round. It's more closely aligned with Cuban rueda, which is, of course, if you know Cuba, that's the birthplace of salsa. Mm-hmm. And when they do their salsa there, they do it in the round. It's not a lane style dance.
Well, we're going to wind down here.
Sorry.
Before we go. No, we're.
No, you just
it's
have
just
to
that
come
we
back
have to.
Again.
Yeah, you just have to come back because we have to move out for another show. But Kat, can you please share your website address and any contact or Facebook information, or at least website, before we close, so more people can find
yes.
out.
Yes. If you want to find out more information about 31st in Brooklyn, one thing you can do is go to alliedmedia.org. That's our fiscal sponsored organization based out of Detroit, as well as go to 31stinbrooklyn.com. And for me, Kauri.com. Big ups to Herman Mehari for letting me do a jazz riff off his last name.
And I do want to just kind of close with this as we talked about telling our tale, and for you being here, an African proverb, until the lions tell their tale, the story of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. So I appreciate you telling your tale through your story and dance and everything that you're doing in Kansas City and the world, actually, because you've traveled internationally. But
yes.
With that, please stay tuned for Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson, and then later Roots Wise Reggae with Rockin' Donna on the mic here.
All righty. Thanks, Kat.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.